So is someone going to be watching me while I sleep?
I'm going to be watching you.
The whole night?
The whole night.
It sounds a little creepy, but that's protocol at NeuroCare in Newton, a sleep lab where people having trouble getting Z's go to find out why. I spent a night here to see what goes into measuring sleep.
We're going to be monitoring your brain waves, your breathing, your oxygen levels, your respiratory rate, and your leg movements.
To do this, electrodes were stuck all over my body, my head, arms, legs, and chest. A microphone taped in my neck, an oxygen tube under my nose, and two belts clipped around my chest and stomach. Not the most comfortable accessories. Then, all of these wires were collected like a ponytail and connected to a box.
Oh, man. I am a bridled horse. And your whole, or a dog.
You feel like
you're
right? I know. It's awful.
What's also awful are the sleep disorders suffered by 40 million Americans. Another 20 million have occasional sleep problems, all at a huge personal and financial cost. According to the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, sleep disorders equal $16 billion in medical costs each year, plus the indirect costs due to lost productivity.
Poor sleep contributes to many chronic diseases.
Neuroscientist Stephen Lockley studies the circadian rhythm at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.
There have been a lot of studies showing that if you don't sleep long enough, you have an increased risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and some types of cancer.
Lockley says sleep is one of the three pillars of health, along with diet and exercise. Yet, despite everything we know about the benefits of a good night's sleep, doctors themselves are often sleep-deprived, especially residents, doctors fresh out of medical school in their first 3 years of hospital training.
The residency system as we know it in the United States was really pioneered by William Halsted, who was the first professor of surgery at Johns Hopkins.
Charles Seisler is chief of the Division of Sleep Medicine at Brigham and Women's.
He was quite famous for his ability to remain awake continuously for seemingly days on end. And it's only about 5 years ago that it was recognized that he was actually a cocaine addict.
Seisler says it's no wonder Halsted could withstand marathon hours of work.
But the system that he put in place has now foisted these hours on generations of physicians.
Physicians like Susan Swords. She recalls regularly working 30-hour shifts in her first 2 years of residency at Cambridge Health Alliance.
There were times I felt tired, but the tired you feel when you've been awake that long is sort of similar to being intoxicated. You feel like you're drunk.
Feeling drunk and taking care of patients. Sword said when morning came, she would have nausea and chills. Then she would go home and pass out. But she still felt groggy after waking up, a phenomenon called sleep inertia, when the brain is awake but not fully functional yet. Last year, Cambridge Health Alliance put a 16-hour cap on all resident work shifts, which was an answer to Sword's dreams.
So my third year, I celebrated and rejoiced because I never had to do that again.
When Chris Landrigan was a resident in the late 90s at Boston Children's Hospital, he recalls taking a nap during a 36-hour shift when a child in respiratory failure was brought to the ICU for incubation.
First thing that I can really remember is my friend standing above me, shaking me awake and saying, Chris, you've got to get up right away. This girl needs to be intubated, at which point I picked up a toothbrush, walked across the hall to the little bathroom and started brushing my teeth and came out about 3 or 4 minutes later, fortunately to someone more senior having stepped in and done what needed to have been done. But it was really a moment of epiphany for me where I said, this is just, thank God I didn't try to intubate this child. This would not have been a good thing.
So 10 years ago, Chris Landrigan and his colleagues, including Charles Seisler and Stephen Lockley, started a clinical trial at Brigham and Women's to study how patient safety was impacted by residents' long work shifts. Their findings? If residents didn't have to work marathon shifts, medical errors could be reduced by a third. Dr. Seisler.
On the traditional schedule, there were 36% more serious medical errors, including 460% increased rate of serious diagnostic mistakes. So they made almost 5 times more serious diagnostic mistakes.
This and other studies have cut down on long workdays, but only to a point. the Institute of Medicine suggested that residents not work more than 16 consecutive hours. But the body that controls resident work hours, the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education, still allows second and third year residents to work up to 24 consecutive hours. Landrigan says he doesn't think there is any biological reason that second and third year residents would be at a lower risk of fatigue-related error.
Really, based on the science that we have been doing over the past 10 years, we are finding things that are not popular necessarily in the medical community and that really challenge existing paradigms of how care is delivered.
The existing paradigms are an entrenched part of the culture of medicine in the United States. Again, Dr. Landrigan.
Physicians who have trained in these systems become understandably attached to them.
There's also a problem with logistics. Shorter shifts mean more of what doctors call patient handoffs. If a resident goes home at 7 p.m., she has to hand off her patient to the doctor taking over for her. A lot of patient details can be lost during this transition. And then there's the money. The government, through the Medicare program, subsidizes residents training in academic hospitals. Dr. Seisler.
From an institution point of view, it's much less expensive to let the government pay for these employees and have them work an unlimited number of hours than to have to hire other physicians to care for the patients.
But Landrigan says there is a fallacy in the notion that residents are cheaper labor.
When medical errors lead to avoidable injuries for patients, they're extremely expensive for the hospitals, as well as obviously being very damaging to the patients themselves. And if those types of adverse events can be reduced, even by 7 to 10%, then the cost of hiring new providers to replace the residents pays for itself.
In order to prove this, Landrigan and Seisler are leading a new, larger study with the hope that this one results in better care for doctors and patients. Ibi Caputo, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Now let me get this straight. You put the lime in the coconut, you drank them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, you call your doctor, woke him up, said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve this slippery ache." I said, "Doctor, ain't there nothing I can take?" I said, "Doctor, to relieve this slippery ache." You put the lime in the coconut, you drank them both.